welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat, and it's great to be back. I know my friend KM on the FM has been doing or has taken over from me, so it's just nice to have a guest spot today. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. So as I mentioned, I am back, but the reason I've come back is I want to introduce you to a very special lady who I've had the privilege to get to know. She is a Queen's alum, a CFRC alum, a well-known Canadian broadcaster, and is now the 16th Chancellor of Queen's University. So not one of our grad students, but she is the Chancellor of Queen's University. I would like to welcome to Grad Chat a woman with a very distinctive voice, Sheila Rogers. Welcome to Grad Chat, Sheila.
Thank you. And I am honored to be with CJ the DJ.
I know. It's a bit corny, isn't it? But it's kind of like everyone said, just do it. And I go, all right, then. And it's kind of stuck for the last 10 years. So there you go. So what's it like being back at CFRC, where we would like to think you got your passion for radio?
I absolutely did develop my passion for radio. I can see you, and I believe I worked in that studio quite a bit. I recorded Dr. F.R.C. Clark doing a program. He was head of the music department, and the program was called The Music Department.
We're all so original, aren't we?
so original. But I loved working with him. I didn't get to talk to him on this program. It was his choices. Played a lot of Carl Nielsen. He loved Nielsen's music. Anyway, just seeing this reminds me of where I began. And I began to think about, maybe I could do this for a living. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could. And in the studio where you're sitting right now, there was an old phone. I got a phone call from the Country and Western station downtown offering me a job.
Is that right?
That is true. I hung up on them because I thought I was sure it was a joke, but it wasn't. They called back. And that was sort of the beginning of it. I still had 2 years to go before I finished my studies, but I went for it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because you know you've made it when you walk into the local cake shop and they recognize your voice.
Isn't that wonderful?
They don't know you, but they recognize the voice.
I always say it's my sister because she has the identical voice.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
it genetics. All depends on what they have to say.
Well, that's true. Then it's you. Otherwise, yeah, the other way. So one of the reasons for bringing Sheila onto the show is that, we're talking about grad students and their research, and I wanted to show the importance of what good communication skills can do to help yourself and others, which is something I've tried to instill in our graduate students over the years. But I mean, that's going to be the main essence of this topic. But before we do that, I think we need a little bit more background on you, Sheila, just in case people in Kingston have forgotten who you are, although I can't imagine how. So you started your career on CFRC. What prompted you to even get started with the radio station at CFRC? Because you were an undergrad here. What made you come to CFRC and say, you know, can I give this a go?
Well, it was my roommate, a woman named Mary Bruce, who became an occupational therapist. And I was listening to CFRC, and I heard somebody reading a record jacket. And I happened to have the very same record jacket. It was for Glenn Gould playing Bach's piano. Well, it was a harpsichord concerto originally, but a piano concerto in C minor. And I was actually reading along with her. And I said to Mary, this is ridiculous. You know, if you're on the radio, you shouldn't just be reading record jackets.
Right.
And I complained so much. And she finally said, if you think you can do a better job, you should just go down there. Now, I don't know whether I did a better job or not, but they were desperate. They were desperate for people to do classical music programs. So when I walked in the door 3 weeks later, I was classical music director. But
brilliant. And of course, we've got such a great collection here, haven't we?
such a great collection, and many of those vinyl LPs are still there. And I really think, I mean, I love listening to student radio. The spontaneity, the passion, and passion is something I do want to talk with you a bit about later on, but it always comes through. It always comes through. And that's what brought me there in the first place, Colette. It was a very interesting time. It would have been in the early, well, I guess 1973, 74, not too many years later, that CRTC would be looking for women and creating affirmative action programs to get women hired on radio stations to hear female voices. It's not that long ago, but there were very few. So my timing was good as well.
Well, I think, I mean, I keep saying this to our students, you know, any of them can do a program here. I mean, CFRC, as we know, is always looking for new programming, not syndicated programming. And there's nothing better than listening to a student voice because they've got a lot to say, whether it's in their field of studies or advocacy work or anything like that. So, you know, I'll keep pushing for that. Come on down, because they train you and everything, and they're volunteer positions, and you can learn so much, can't you, from it?
Absolutely. And it's all about communication. Either you're doing interviews or you're presenting your own story. And both are just really important skills to have. I don't know that they were ever more important than they are now to make your story stand out and to express it. So I think CFRC is a jewel.
It is a jewel. And we're lucky to be a part of it.
So lucky. And I'm so thrilled it's still going strong.
It is. It was over 100 odd years now. And
that's right.
So I've got a long way to go to get to 100 on this show. But there you go.
I'm shorter.
There's no reason why it should stop, because there's lots of students coming through. Now, I was speaking to a friend the other day and mentioned I was going to interview you. And they started laughing. And so I asked why. And they said, and they said it was because they used to watch CKWS Weather just because you were on it. So it looks like the whole group had a bit of a crush on you. So what made you want to be a weather girl? How was that? That's a little bit different, because you're out front in front of a TV screen.
Yeah, I would say nothing made me want to be a weather girl. But I was called the weather girl. The way it went down was like this, Colette. I was actually doing a classical music program at CFMKFM, which was the country station right above the TV studio of CKWS. And one night, the late night weatherman didn't come in.
And
the fellows who were running master control and television called me and said, there are no other on-air people in the building. Can you come down and do the weather? And listen, I was dressed for radio. I was wearing a flannel shirt and a pair of jeans, and I didn't know my H from my L, but I just kind of read it, and it was very spontaneous. I had to be very honest. I told people I didn't know what I was talking about. And a week later, I was on that shift permanently, until one night, after about 2 weeks of solid rain, and you know the rain you get in Kingston. There's no pussyfooting around it. It can be very, very powerful. I've been raining for 2 weeks, and I was getting dressed up for Halloween as a duck. So I thought, I'm just going to wear my duck costume.
What got them.
That probably was what it was. And so I just did the weather straight. And then at the end, I said, it's not good weather, not even for a duck. And then they went to the commercial. The next morning, I was fired.
You're kidding.
No, but then the next afternoon, that same afternoon, I was hired and paid $10 a weather forecast. People called in and said, what is she going to do tonight? So
that was pressure for you.
That was pressure. And I didn't give into it every single night. I couldn't. I would have run out of things pretty quickly. But I would say it was an early form of performance art.
Yes, for sure. Well, I mean, today they just bring in their dogs with them. I mean, dressing up as a duck is so much better.
Well, it only happened once, but I still meet people who saw it, which is incredibly, I don't know if it's thrilling or embarrassing, maybe a bit of both.
So you've been on CBC. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was the majority of your professional career, being on CBC Radio. with programs like Morningside, The Arts Tonight, This Morning, The Next Chapter. You're very much into the arts, different forms of arts, aren't you? And performing arts, music, theatre, mm-hmm. all those sorts of things. With that, you were also a big champion of mental health advocacy and adult literacy. Yeah. And also a big part of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and particularly with the work that your cousin, of course, our 15th Chancellor, the Honourable Murray Sinclair, led. But what I found interesting is that your part in the TRC was amplifying the voices of Indigenous peoples. How important has it been for you to be able to use your voice to help communicate for others?
I have a very strange affectation, Colette. Microphones don't make me nervous. They might make most people nervous. Public speaking doesn't make me nervous. It's real life that right. makes me nervous. But because I have this, I don't really know what to call it. It has been a gift, so why don't I just call it that? I feel I should be using it for people who do feel they can't go in front of a microphone mm-hmm. and they can't tell their story, or I can sit with them and help them tell their story into a microphone so that other people can hear it. It's sort of a pay it forward, I guess.
Right.
I've been very lucky with what I've been able to do, as you mentioned the great programs that I was able to work on. And, you know, interestingly, not always about the arts, often science, current affairs, areas that I had to really buff up my learning skills, mm-hmm. my critical thinking skills, which I really believe I developed at Queen's, and get interested in other stories than the ones that were my milieu. And using my voice for other people's stories is a very big responsibility. In particular, acting as an honorary witness to the testimonies of residential school survivors, I took many, many notes. I look at the notes frequently so that I know I'm still telling the story correctly when right. When I share their stories. But your job, and I think this is your job as a journalist as well, you stand for the truth of what you've witnessed.
Right.
And I witnessed probably 1,000 testimonies. My beloved late cousin, Murray Iban, which means ancestor, witnessed thousands. He listened to thousands and thousands. But the ones I heard, and when I hear people denying residential school or denying or saying it was a good thing, I can say, well, I heard these 1,000 voices, and here's what happened to them, and you wouldn't call this good. So I think it's being able to stand for the truth. Again, I'm not afraid to stand up in front of a microphone, or when I see something wrong, mm-hmm. call it. Something just sort of rises up in me and I have to do it. Damn the torpedoes and damn the consequences. But I also have been so very lucky to be well-trained. I had wonderful mentors. I had great mentors at CFRC, and I'm able to feel secure in that world.
That's great. That's really good.
Well, it's a real gift too, I must say.
It's interesting because you talk about you've learned a lot from doing that, because we all have to learn to listen better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not naturally good listeners. Mm-hmm. And listening to someone else, and then, you know, the old, that game where you've got a whole circle and is the sentence that you started with the same at the end. Usually, invariably, it's not, but telling someone else's story.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do.
It's an honor and a responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you bring in every sense that you've got to it. Listening is the key thing. And you're right. I think we become, a friend of mine who used to be the president of Nipissing University, Mike DeGagne, said we become sloppy listeners. And a lot of this is because of social media, and everything's in little chunks and sound bites and so on, that we don't sort of bask in just the wonderful glory of listening to a long story, or you know, audiobooks are very popular, and I think that's really great. Podcasts also similarly, so popular. I see these as really good indications that we want to be good listeners, you know,
right.
But it really means, and actually I can tell you a little story. I met a survivor, a woman I'd worked with in adult literacy. I didn't know she'd gone to residential school, and I just started bombarding her with questions. And she put her hand up and just said, "Sheila, you just have to shut up and listen." And it was bracing in the moment, but it was a very important lesson that listen and silent have the same letters in them. And I think that must be intentional at some subconscious right. level. And you just pull back and quit trying to get your brilliant thought in there. Just receive the story and maybe even hold it for a few seconds. You don't have to have an immediate response. Just take it in. I think that has a lot to do with listening with your ears, but also with your heart. And that's a practice.
It's interesting you say that, because in the interviews here, I'm constantly butting in because I suddenly have a thought from what someone's just told me. I go, and I go off on a tangent. And yeah. But I mean, I tell them in the beginning, that's probably what I'm going to do, because I want them to think on their feet too. You know, I've distracted you going somewhere else. Can you pull it back in? But you're right, though, in terms of generally, interview aside, let the person speak.
It's all about who you're interviewing, mm-hmm. I think. If you're talking to a politician and they're going to try to give you the old message track, you do want to get in there. You want to take them off that track.
Right.
And get them speaking like a human being.
That's difficult.
Well, you know, and it's former communicators, former broadcasters that are training politicians to give the answers that they want, but not necessarily the answers that an interviewer or journalist needs.
Right.
And heavens, you're working for the public. Anyway, that's a digression of my own making, my dear.
Okay, well, we'll move on. So you're now the Chancellor of Queen's, a role you have taken on before at the University of Victoria. So they gave you a bit of a grounding. What prompted you to take on this role at another university? Because it's not everyone thinks it's just this grand position that you get to stand on stage, but as we know, convocations can be quite long and it can be very tiring standing on that stage. But it's more than just that. It's, you know, you're at board meetings, you're out there helping the university. So what made you want to take on that role again?
Well, UVic was a complete and utter surprise. I wasn't an alumna. I got a call from the president at that point, Jamie Castles, saying, "I'd like to take you out for lunch." And I thought, well, that sounds very nice, Jamie Castles. I'd love to have lunch with you. And he and the board chair, Dr. Eric Moore, said, "We would like to invite you to be chancellor." I had no idea what it meant, Colette. No idea whatsoever. But I thought if there were a way to make some kind of positive change, and at this point, it was 2015, so the TRC was just wrapping up, the Truth and Reconciliation mm-hmm. Commission. I thought if we could try to put some of the calls to action into place at UVic, if we could try to move forward the three Indigenous communities that the university stands on, if they had more prominence, if there was a greater partnership,
right.
maybe I could work on that. And it turned out that there were things that I could do and I could move the dial. The chancellor role is a very funny role because you've got a wand that is about this big and I'm holding up a little pen, a very little pen.
It's a nice colored pen, but it's a little pen.
But you can talk to people. I think the way it's been put in my mind too is that you have some influence but not power. And you have to be very careful not to interfere with the operating mm-hmm. of the university. Mm-hmm. That's not your place. But there were some really good things, I think, that we got accomplished at UVic. We changed the convocation ceremony so that it began with the First Nations, their land, their territory.
Yes.
And we saw a lot of Indigenous grads go through. They were able to wear their regalia. No more kneeling. We stopped the kneeling.
You did kneeling? Oh, goodness.
There was kneeling. And as you know, mental health is a real passion of mine.
Yes.
And we got a student mental health program going and a bunch of other things. So why would I want to do it again? The reason, well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, Principal Patrick Dean called me and presented it to me at first. And then Murray called and he was still chancellor then yeah. and said, I think this is a very good idea and you should do it. And he said, I'm asking you to do it. So I couldn't really say no to him. He also said to me, if there were ever other things you're involved in that you wanted to get out of, you can just say I'm too busy as chancellor. But
that's true, very true.
Because
you're not getting paid. It's kind of like, you know,
not getting paid. And a lot of people think you are getting paid, but it was a chance to honor my alma mater. And
right.
It was a chance to say thank you for what I learned there, the friends I made there, the friends I still have, and really getting started on a career that that gave me a great deal of satisfaction and meaning in my life. So I thought it would be a chance to put something back in. And I've only been in that role for 1 year, though it feels like more, but I mean that in a good way. People have been wonderful. When you're a chancellor and you don't know something about AI, you can call somebody up and say,
exactly. Can you do it for me?
Can you help me out here? And they do. And I couldn't do that as Citizen Sheila, you know. It's that lovely access to really wonderful brains and thinking. And I've met some wonderful people doing magical things at Queen's. So the convocation ceremony has changed subtly. I'm hoping to make a few more changes, but it's not, so that's our outward facing ceremony to the world. But again, working on mental health, not just student, but for everyone on campus. And that's been a real passion, and people have been very kind to invite me to come and speak and do things. Working with the Indigenous leadership and senior leadership team and bringing them together to see how we can move things forward for Queen's. And I see some really positive changes there too.
That's good.
I have a lot of one-on-one meetings, and I get to pour things into the poor old principal's ear.
I love it.
But meeting with students has been really thrilling. And Nikki Boychuk-Hale, who's our student. Yep, the rector, has become a really dear friend. And I feel as though I have a good understanding of what students are facing at Queen's and how I can step in perhaps and move things along.
Well, I think that's important. I mean, what you've been saying is, you know, all your work that you've done to this point, you are now able to use to help in this particular role. And I think that's an important thing for all of us to remember, is that as we're going through our life, we're learning so much.
Yes.
But we need to make sure that then we can pass that on as well, or give guidance, or whatever word we want to call it. And again, that's all about using our communication skills to give back.
Completely, Colette. I think that's a really, really good point. And I think about what I learned at Queen's, but I never stopped learning. And I really think about continuous learning through your life and continuing education. And I think that's something that Queen's can offer everybody who's ever graduated, or everyone who hasn't. Come to Queen's.
Come to Queen's.
It's a great place.
So you're getting to meet, as you said, a lot of students, both undergrad and grad, and hearing about their studies, ambitions, their thoughts of student life. How have you found our students in explaining these elements of their university life? I mean, are they explaining things well, or is it just more the ones that are speaking, the ones that are more on the advocacy side? I mean, because I like to think there's a bit of both. I mean,
I would say
university life isn't all bad. I mean, there's a lot of good things about university life. Is it always great? No, there's things, but that's like in anything in life.
I think I hear from both people who are accomplished advocates and really want me to join them in their advocacy. And my role, I have to be very careful here too. I'm an advocate for some things, but again, if it's in the way the university is running, I can speak to people, but I can't necessarily change people. But I do want to listen. I do want to hear what they're feeling on the ground.
Right.
I am actually, to be honest, Colette, blown away by how articulate and eloquent our students are. I think the people who are more hesitant perhaps that's more of a shyness issue and feeling they maybe can't put the story together, but I know they can. I know they can. And I know they can go out and they can change things and they can frame things so that people understand what their passions are, what their story is, what they're advocating for. I know they can do that.
Right.
A place like CFRC is a great place to learn how to do that. Your airtime is limited. You yep. can't sort of sit back and figure out all your thoughts for hours and hours and hours. You've got to know what you're going to do. So how do you frame what you need to get across?
Yes.
How do you make it sound human?
And how do you engage the audience? Because that's a big thing that I always talk about. You've got to engage the audience. Be the audience when you're thinking about how you say things.
Exactly. Making that connection. Mm-hmm. I think it all depends on your platform. If you're looking at radio, I've always believed that there's only one set of ears that you're talking to at a time. So if I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth in the morning and I hear our morning show host say, "Good morning, Manitoba," I'm looking around like, who else is in the bathroom here with me? It's just
and
me.
Why are they?
And why? What are they doing here? And how did they get in? But it's really a one-on-one. It's one mouth to your ears.
Right.
And I've always thought that immediately creates an intimacy when you use second person singular as opposed to second person plural.
Right.
And that is, I think, it builds connection, it builds understanding, and it builds engagement. And when I'm just talking to you
mm-hmm.
right now, I'm not talking to anybody else. I know people are listening.
Right.
I'm thrilled out of my head that they are. But this is our conversation. And so I'm not going to say many of you or some of you, it'll just be you. That was it sounds very small, but it was a shortcut to engagement, a shortcut to a kind of intimacy. People feel that they know radio hosts. I bet, well, as you say, you meet people in Kingston, they know you. And that's because of how you are on the radio. You know, you're friendly, you're warm. I'm not saying everyone has to be friendly and warm, but to be able to communicate what you need to communicate is what we're after here and what's going to set our grads in really good stead as they graduate.
Do you think that's one of the important words you said, that, you know, the intimacy of the one-on-one? So regardless of whether our students are talking about their research at a conference or writing a journal article, what a lot of people are going to be reading, thinking about, I'm just talking to one person right now, or writing to one person, or videoing a film for one person to help with that connection. Because you can get really scared knowing there's 1,000 people watching you.
Yes, exactly.
But you don't get so scared if it's one-on-one.
I think that's a really good point. And you may be out in front talking to 1,000 people, but I think you have to bear in mind that each one of those 1,000 people is an individual.
Right.
And I think that's where it probably will settle best.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to know who your audience is as much as you possibly can, and gear your communication, gear your story towards them, especially if you're presenting something at a conference. I mean, that hopefully you do know who you'll be speaking with. But there's nothing, I think everybody, we're storytelling beings. I think we thrive on stories. And that stories are what we hold. We may not go holding our statistics or our data, but we do hold stories. And
right.
I think that's just a human impulse. So learning how to create a story, how to turn research into a story, how to make it relatable. I think about this young woman who appeared before university council studying music. She was in her fourth year and noticed that in a lot of video games, they were using Gregorian chant. And so she decided, I'm going to find out what those chants are. I'm going to study medieval music, see how they place it into Game of Thrones-like video games.
Right.
And it was totally fascinating. And people started hearing the music thinking, I was never interested in Gregorian chant until I see how it related to video games. I mean, it's just the elasticity of creative thinking.
But I think that's also too with now, you know, granting agencies and employers hiring people, they're looking at more than just the interview skill. They're looking at, you know, what can you put in a video or in a blog? What do you do on blogs? Your writing skills, etc. It's a real combination these days. And some people who may be nervous speaking themselves, put a video together to explain what you do, what your work is.
Absolutely.
Because that some people are better at doing visuals as opposed to the oration. So find the one, our grad students need to find the one that works best for them.
Exactly.
And then really work on that.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm not a visual person. I have never, I mean, when I do give a talk, it's just me.
Right.
I haven't used slides. I mean, it's unbelievable how cave I am. I've just crawled out of the cave. But it's really, I podcast though, and I was one of the early podcasters
right.
in Canada. The CBC locked us out, and I thought, well, darn it, still going to broadcast. So I learned how to podcast. And necessity will help you out too.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, maybe you're not a big fan of the microphone, but you're a great writer, and there's so many ways to write and combine visuals. It's incredible what you can do all by yourself.
Yeah, very true. I mean, this is why I like our events, like the 3-minute thesis, which is all about the oration, or Grad Flix, which is a 1-minute video or a research trailer, I like to call them. And hopefully I can get you involved in some of those things, because I think you would find it fabulous as well. And I know the students.
You're not going to leave us then.
Oh no, I'm living in Kingston. I'm here for a while. Yes.
I'll be involved then for sure.
Yes, because I think you will absolutely love it. So Sheila, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for still being involved with your alma mater. And thanks for your support you are giving our students, and basically just for being you. You know, I know when speaking to Nikki, her eyes light up when she talks about you. So, you know, and that's just one student. And I know you've had interactions with a lot of other students as well as faculty and staff. So thank you very much. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Colette. And honestly, I love what you're doing here. Grad Chat's fantastic. And happy 10th anniversary to Grad Chat.
That's you.
Really exciting.
Thank you.
And thank you for your listening too, and everything you've done for our graduates too.
I love it. Thank you. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end, and I would love this to keep going. But don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.